Hello, all you fine basketball people. I'm Eric Corrine. Welcome to Jurassic Pod, where I am joined, as usual, by a reeling Holly McKenzie, who has found out that Harry Styles is not nominated for a single one of the three major Grammy Awards. I didn't know this. Am I breaking this news?
I'm catching up on... It's been a crazy day, and I've also had a bunch of audio issues, and I didn't know that. Wow, what?
Yeah, he got some He's like nominated plenty, but not nominated, I believe, for album, song or record of the year. He was like nominated for best immersive record, and isn't every record supposed to be immersive?
Not the bad ones. They're supposed to be. The bad ones don't get there.
Are immersive and ambient the opposite?
Immersive, you're like in. Ambient is like it's surrounding you. I think that's how I would think of it. Immersive, I am one with the music. Ambient, I have stepped into the room with the music.
So best immersive audio album nominees: Alicia Keys, Alicia. Mm-hmm. Patricia Barber, Click, however you want to say that. I say Click. Harry Styles, Fine Line.
Oh, such a beautiful
Stephen Wilson, The Future Bites, and Anne Karen Sundel Ask, and Det Norske Gentekor, Stilly Grander. I'm going to assume they're Swedish.
That definitely sounds the most immersive to me, just from your pronunciation. But I have a really weird thing to say that I'm now embarrassed to say because I feel like I should know this. But Harry won his first Grammy for this album already last year.
Hmm. Did he like re-release something? Were there any singles? I don't know. The Grammys obviously are supposed to cover a very specific time frame. So I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I can tell you that the nominees for what do you want to hear? Record of the year or album of the year? We probably don't have time for both. We should start.
Go quick.
Okay. Record of the year, ABBA, I Still Have Faith in You, John Batiste, Freedom, Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga, who get nominated every time they do anything together. I Get a Kick Out of You, Justin Bieber, Daniel Caesar and Givian.
Wow.
Peaches, Brandi Carlile, Right on Time, Doja Cat and SZA, Kiss Me More, Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever, Lil Nas X, Montero, Olivia Rodrigo, Driver's License, and Silk Sonic, Leave the Door Open. Album of the Year.
That's a lot of nominees, it feels
yeah,
like.
Okay. Yeah, this seems like the Oscar approach to getting as many eyes/ears on the products. And anyway, we are Album of the Year, John Batiste, Tony Bennett and Lady Gaga, Love for Sale, Justin Bieber, Justice, The Triple Chucks Deluxe, Doja Cat, Planet Her, Billie Eilish, Happier Than Ever, Her, Back of My Mind, Lil Nas X, Montero, Olivia Rodrigo, Sour, Taylor Swift, Evermore, and our old pal Kanye West, Donda.
Let's go, Olivia.
Yeah.
Or Billie. Or Lil Nas X.
I'm like not into Billie Eilish. I think it was just her first album. All the songs sounded exactly the same. I'm like, this isn't my
jam. I really like her, but I can tell that I'm getting old because I now have such a like warmth, like caring feeling for young celebrities. I just want them to have good things and the world to be good to them. Whereas before, maybe I didn't think about that so much, and now I just am like, I want good things for you. And I enjoy both of those girls, and also Lil Nas X is just awesome and fun and important.
So. Not nominated for a Grammy. The Arkells, whose friend Nick Nurse coaches the Toronto Raptors.
Rough week for both of these parties.
Yeah, I think it's actually just Arkells, not the Arkells. So my bad to the fine folks from Hamilton. The Raptors are 3-10 in the last seven games.
3-10.
3-7. Yeah, 3-10 is 13 games, and I don't think that's a record in the last 13 games. I think it's more like 4-8 or 5-7. No, those also don't add up to 13. Just ignore me. The Raptors are 1-3 on their road trip so far, 1-2 since we recorded the podcast. We both nailed that they would lose in Utah, win in Sacramento, precipitating by one game the firing of Luke Walton. Let's not get it twisted. The loss to the Raptors really got him fired, not the loss to the Jazz, although that did result in somebody throwing up. And then the Raptors went to Oracle Arena for the second time. I went to, no, that's not what it's called anymore. The Chase Center. They went to the Chase Center for the second time. I went to the Chase Center for the first time, and that game was not close. And the Raptors lost in San Francisco to the Warriors. I don't think any real surprises in there, but yeah, you don't, I don't think any huge optimistic signs coming out of a week that we must note was played without OG Anunoby.
And that's what I was going to say. And also, after my rant about wanting to see Utah, we still have not seen Utah. He did speak in Utah, but he didn't have any updates, really, I don't think. And he still hasn't returned or made his regular season debut because it has been a minute with this calf injury. And then we found out that OG Anunoby was going to be out with a hip pointer that he sustained in practice.
Yeah, never practice. This is what you get for practicing.
Just yeah, so
Kyle Lowry was right all along.
So you proved me right last week. You were proven right when you reprimanded me for wanting the team to be healthy, because wishing for health in an NBA season, how do you say it? It's a fool's errand.
Fool's errand, yes.
Yeah. I was the fool. Me. This is the fool.
Well, let's lean on some optimism for a second. I got out of Dodge to return to Toronto, saying get out of Dodge make you laugh?
Because it makes me sound like I'm 85. A very old man. Yeah. I'm in a really small town.
Kind of got out of Dodge. Missy?
Oh my goodness.
I flew home from San Francisco through Detroit, which I believe is a General Motors company. So there is
Are you in Toronto right now?
I'm in Toronto right now.
Oh my goodness. I thought you were in Indiana.
Okay. Well, that would be weird. They're playing in Memphis on Wednesday. So if I skipped Memphis just to spend a week in Indiana, that would that'd be strange. No, I am in
Maybe you were going to write a week in the life of O'Shea Brissett.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm in my basement.
Okay. I did not know that.
Hi, Holly.
This podcast is just blowing my mind, guys.
Yeah, I'm just breaking news all over the place here. They say I can't beat Woj to the punch. Why didn't see Woj or Shabs report where I'm recording this podcast? Shams has been all over the Iman Shumpert beat.
Listen, you know who has been all over the Iman Shumpert beat?
We'll talk about the Raptors at some point, I promise.
Yeah, sorry guys. Iman Shump is Dancing with the Stars.
He is the star. He is the ultimate star dancer.
I have to tell you, he was incredible. And I don't say that like, oh, he was incredible because he's like a huge, you know, tall athlete with a partner who's much smaller than him having to do these steps. He ended up being incredible. And I highly recommend that people go to the YouTube, Dancing with the Stars YouTube, and watch some of those dances. My favorite was his first dance in the semifinals, if you're so inclined. But everyone else really loved the one he did from the oh my goodness, what's the movie called? It's the guy who did Get Out, Jordan Peele, is that his name?
Yeah.
Am I missing this up? Jordan Peele did Get Out, and then he did another
Us.
I can't watch any of those movies. Like I have to completely like just pretend that world doesn't exist because scary movies make me vomit.
So. And scary movies about the, you know, racial implications in this world we live in. Maybe even scarier, Holly.
Reality is
the ultimate horror movie.
This podcast is a mess. I feel like we are all over.
So what I was trying to say before I blew your mind by saying I was at my home, was I left San Francisco on Monday, flew through Detroit, spent 4 lovely hours in the airport there before coming home. But the Raptors did practice on Monday, and reports from my colleague Doug Smith seemed to indicate that Yuta Watanabe did go through a full practice on Monday. He hadn't, when we talked to him in Utah, he had not been doing contact drills. So maybe we see him on Wednesday against Memphis.
Do you think that the turnaround will be that fast between contact and playing, or it's a
matter of conditioning, I would say, yeah. But usually, and like I feel like Pascal Siakam was a different case just because there were all these sort of checklists, like all these boxes that needed checking off. So even though he had been practicing with contact for a while, he needed to get to these time markers at the very least before he was cleared for a game. I think often there aren't all those boxes to check, especially with an injury that, while obviously very annoying and very persistent, was not surgically repaired. There's not some cut they have to worry about. So I'm guessing, and I've said this a few times already, I'm guessing it's happening sooner rather than later. And the point is, the Raptors need it. They need it. And OG Anunoby was briefly questionable for the game against the Warriors before being downgraded to doubtful and then out. So you hope he's not far behind, if he's behind at all. Hip pointers, from what I've read, I am not a medical doctor. They can really F you up all over the body, not just in the hip. Mm-hmm. They throw your whole axis off.
Being reminded that every part of your body is connected is always fun when you hurt one part.
Yeah, it seems to happen in over 30 more than under 30, but OG has not had a ton of injury luck in his short career, so we hope to see him soon, because the Warriors and against the Jazz, we were reminded that without him, the defense that they're playing is awfully exploitable.
Yeah, it's not really going to work. The thing about the Warriors' loss is we both went into it assuming that they would lose that game. So the fact that it was a loss in the win-loss column wasn't disappointing. However, when Fred VanVleet can hold Steph Curry to 12
points.
12 points.
One three-pointer and 12 points.
2 of 10 from the floor. You expect it, if it's not going to be a win, you expect it to be a closer game than what it was. But I mean, Andrew Wiggins loves to play the Raptors. He loves to play the Raptors.
Jordan Poole was also great. He had 33
and Wiggins had 32.
Yeah, every time I looked up from my computer, it was a three-pointer, and just when glancing quickly, like, briefly, Jordan Poole and Steph Curry look alike before
you
focus
in. So you're
in
Golden State, so you're just assuming it's going
to be... But it was Jordan Poole every time, except for that one time.
He's 8 of 11, and Wiggins finished 6 of 8 from 3. That's insane! And Otto Porter Jr. was 5 of 9.
Yeah, in my perfect Raptors offseason column, I said the Raptors should sign Otto Porter Jr. Obviously, it makes more sense that he's in Golden State for his career purposes, because, man, does Steph Curry create a gravitational force. He is a planet. Obviously, one player is totally unavailable to help when he's on the floor. Whoever's guarding him is not helping off Steph Curry. And that badly contorts a defense that has become fairly reliant on helping. And we talked about this last week, so I don't want to go all in on the defense, especially when it's missing, if not their best defensive player, I'd say right along VanVleet as one of the two most important defensive players. And one of the two guys who really keeps the wheels on the axis, if you will, if wheels go on axes. I think so. I'm trying to remember my geometry. And so OG Anunoby is a guy who's going to keep guys in front of him more often than not. He knows when to help and when not. He's very good at recovering. And what we saw in both the Jazz game, and the Jazz do it in a different way because they have Rudy Gobert, who you have to stay attached to as a lob threat, and they have all these shooters around them. So the Jazz really, I forgot if they were if they topped 23s or not, but it was damn close. They won the three battle in that game. Steph Curry hits
19 threes.
Yeah, Steph Curry hits 1 3 against the Raptors. The other dudes hit 21. And I think that's baked into this defense, is the idea that sometimes teams are going to get hot when you're playing them. But as Nick Nurse said after the game against the Warriors, when guys get hot, you've got to make sure to get out to them, and you've got to, and maybe that's where the lack of experience comes in. You've got to anticipate where the ball is going, and the sort of institutional knowledge right now, even if the bodies, you know, they've collected all these long, lanky, athletic body types, some of which are injured again. Even if the bodies are there, the minds right now just aren't attuned to the best NBA offenses. I think it's fair to say after those two losses in particular.
That body-mind connection is pretty important. I feel like we're like a yoga podcast right now. But yes, I obviously agree with what you're saying. I wanted to ask you, this wasn't in the rundown, sorry, but it is something that I meant to put in there and was thinking about. Are you surprised, or have you anticipated, or is this about where you expected Malachi Flynn's minutes to be? What have you thought about that?
Well, I mean, I think I thought one of him or Goran Dragic would be in the rotation regularly as a like 16 to 20 minute per game guy. So I didn't know which one it would be. My sort of working assumption was that, and we're going back to the beginning of the season here, was that it was going to be Fred in the mid 30s, Goran, you know, in that 16 to 20 range, and maybe Malachi getting in those like 10 to 15 minutes a night, and they'd go more heavily on, you know, the multi-guard lineups, which they've used so much in the past. They haven't done that. They've, you know, Delano Batten is a guard, but he's a different type of guard. I think he's certainly, you know, still a surprise, but he's being, his flaws are being displayed when he's in on lineups.
Opponents are aware of who he is now. Like his name is not probably on the actual scouting board.
Yeah. And when he's out there and Fred VanVleet is not, it does not look good. Because he is just not at the point where he can be the lead creator, on a lineup. They've occasionally put Gary Trent a bit more in that role. And I mean, there's not much of a sample size there, but to answer your question, I'm certainly very surprised with how it's played out in terms, if you look at those three guys' minutes, who's played the most. As far as Flynn specifically, like, I could have seen a world where this developed. So I'd say I'm slightly surprised with Malachi in specifically, but in general, I am very surprised. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking as the trip went on, like, I always think in my head, if it's going to be a blowout win or a blowout loss, maybe we're going to get to see, you know, him get some playing time. And we did have some of those games. We had a blowout win in Sacramento and the loss in, Golden State, but the minutes were really, high for the starters in Golden State again, Fred.
Yeah, I was a bit 39. I was surprised. Again, 2 games off. So 2 days off, rather, 2 practice days. I believe they were staying in San Francisco on Monday, and well, definitely on Monday and Tuesday before flying to Memphis.
They were not stopping over at the Detroit airport for a few hours.
No, I think they had they got a direct. And so Scotty, in addition to Fred VanVleet, Scotty Barnes, I believe, is now 37 minutes shy of matching his total minutes from last year at Florida State.
You wrote about this, right?
It was a note in my, well, I wrote about him in Portland, and then I asked again following the game on Sunday, and Nick Nurse said, he's going to play a lot more than that. He's going to play a lot more minutes. He's really, really young, and he needs the court time to get better. So, yeah, I don't think his minutes are about to come down, although if and when OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Scotty Barnes, and Knockwood, Yuta Watanabe are all healthy, that should help maybe get him down from top 15 in the league to to something like 30.
Which is kind of absurd when you think about it.
Being top 15 in the league and also third on the Raptors.
we talked about this last week, probably the week before that too. But again, like, he did not have a good game against the Warriors. Who did, really? And then you look at the box score at the end of the night, and he still had a double-double with 10 points, 13 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. He just does stuff.
Yeah,
let's
talk about Scotty Barnes. I think it's important because I think he's looking a little flat, and that's why I asked, and this is only compared to the beginning of the season. I don't think it's time to panic or anything, but he's looking like a rookie who is being given all the minutes he can handle, and it's a lot. And that's not to say he isn't, there aren't moments in every game where, you know, he hit 2 threes, which I'm sure Nick Nurse loved to see against the Warriors. He had a nice pass to Pascal Siakam under the basket for a dunk to, I think it's maybe the only time you could say that the Warriors were forced to call a timeout. They might have called some other timeouts, but that I believe that was the only time they were quote unquote forced to call a timeout. But that first half, the whole game really in Sacramento, he's missing that bounce and that zip that we saw in the first few games. What have you seen from him?
Yeah. And I think that probably the most logical reasoning would be just the minutes, you know, and it's not just the minutes too. It's the fact that you're playing at such a higher pace and speed against competition that is, you know, largely bigger, stronger, more experienced than you. And the grind of the NBA, like just the travel, like this 2-week trip was probably crazy for most.
Yeah, when we talked to him in Portland, he knew the next 3 games, so the 3 games that have already happened, but he did not know what the 2 games were after that. Like, he did not know that Memphis and Indiana were following that.
I mean, literally taking it day by day, I guess, right?
Can't blame him.
No, you definitely can't. The thing to me that is interesting is hearing Nick talk about Scotty, I think, is what is one of the most exciting parts to me, because to have a coach who already trusts and has this much faith in a rookie to play them this many minutes, to give them this many opportunities, to say to your question, he's going to play a lot more minutes, is one thing. But then to also have Nick encouraging him, you need to shoot more threes. I want you to be more aggressive. I want you doing more of that. Just to me is exciting because it shows, okay, people who are a lot smarter than me think he's going to be really good and think he's going to be the kind of great player that he needs to be taking these steps now. And that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think that's sort of the skeleton key to this season and what this season is about for the Raptors, because like every so often when the offense, and by the way, the offense is ranked 8th in the league. So that's not really the end of the court that is really messing them up. But every so often when the offense is looking poor or like Fred is bailing them out yet again and late in the clock, I'm thinking, boy, this team could really use Goran Dragic's, I'm going to take a tangent here. And I apologize. I wrote a story today on Fred VanVleet and the pronunciation of his name.
Which I'm looking forward to reading this. Yeah. I have it saved, haven't read it, but yes.
Good quotes from everybody. And by the way, if you want to read it and you don't for some reason have a subscription to The Athletic, it's Black Friday week, apparently. So $1 per month for the next year. It's the best sale you're going to get this year for The Athletic.
That is a legit crazy deal.
Yeah. Yeah, you're really selling this, Holly. I appreciate it.
I don't know if you're being sarcastic.
No, you are. You are. You absolutely are. I admire people who can sell things, because I always feel like greasy and guilty when I'm trying to sell things.
So. I would feel greasy and guilty if it wasn't legitimately a really big deal. Yeah, as someone who hates spending money and who prides herself on always finding things for much cheaper than they should be. I don't like spending money, okay? I'm from a small town. We don't like to do that. We don't like wasting money, because there often wasn't a lot of it. But when something is a good deal, I want to shout it from the rooftops. Yeah. So.
Well, thank you. Listen to Holly and not me. Listen to Holly and subscribe to The Athletic for $1 a month.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So I did a story on Fred Van Vliet. His name pronunciation, how it often comes out as Fred Van Fleet. And I talked to a speech language professor for the reason why that mispronunciation of a seemingly simple name happens so often. I'm not going to give away any more than that. But in the comments, there were mentions of Goran and his last name. And now I am terrified that I'm pronouncing his last name wrong. Like, I've always said Dragic. I can't even do it. I'm totally in my own head. I've always said Dragic. Goran Dragic. Goran Dragic. Right? That's how it... Goran Dragic. I've always said that, but now I'm worried it's not a CH at the end, and it's Dragic or something.
Dragic?
Yeah. Like, anyway.
Well, probably with the correct pronunciation, it is different than how we are saying it.
Yeah. And that was a point brought up about Van Vliet, is because we believe the name is Dutch, the proper Dutch name to pronounce it is probably not Van Vliet. But the way the Van Vliet family would pronounce it is Van Vliet, which I believe we should just go by. Like, it's your name. You get to decide how it's pronounced.
Should we go by? If we weren't saying Van Vliet, what would we be saying?
Well, some people were arguing that, I believe people who know Afrikaans, so Dutch and sort of South African dialect came from the Dutch. My wife is South African, so I know this a little bit. And because the V and F sounds are so similar, it might come off more as Fred Van Vliet or Van Vliet or something like that. Okay. But I did not get into that. Call him Fred Van Vliet, or as Puff Daddy said, I don't care what you call me, just call me something nice. Why I mentioned Goran.
Wait, but just to be clear, Fred Van Vliet, the way we have been saying
it. Yeah, we are correct. We are right.
Is the way that, yeah, okay. Just making sure. Remember when we found out that DeMar's last name, when he says it, is actually DeMar DeRozan, and his entire career we've been saying DeRozan. I still say DeRozan. And so he's like, I don't mind. Like, that's just, you know, why I bother correcting people. But it's actually DeMar DeRozan. Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a bit of sense, but yeah, it's all where you put the emphasis, Holly.
Occasionally
when I get stuck on, well, this team could really use some more minutes from Goran, you have to bring that back to what Nick Nurse is saying about Scotty Barnes. And no, they don't play the same position. They don't even really feel like there's not much crossover in skill set. There's a bit, but not much. But you have to remember that this season isn't mostly about the wins. And
it's about Scotty.
Yeah. And what?
Imagine coming into the league.
But not Scotty, just like the future in general. Yeah.
Yes. But imagine being the rookie that you get drafted to a team that has been very good and recently won a championship and, you know, all of these things. And you have your own expectations and goals and hopes for yourself. But then you also kind of know that the year is about development and largely your own development. That's a lot.
Yeah. And I should
being
also...
Being a pro athlete, could never do it. Couldn't handle it. Emotionally, I am weak, fragile. Couldn't do it. Would crumble.
Should also say that he's still bandaged around the thumb. And how that's affecting them, we don't know.
I can't think of what game it was, if it was Golden State or if it was Sacramento, but there was a moment where he was like...
some wincing.
Yeah.
Speaking of the win in Sacramento, Pascal Siakam played really well.
We've gotten this far without talking about this.
Well, because I think, like, between the Utah game and the Warriors game, like, which wasn't his fault, like, he was fine. He was, I think he was the leading scorer for the Raptors, but it's not like he was impacting the game in the same way. And I'll tell you, like, I wrote about Pascal Siakam and a lot of the comments, and I try to read the comments because they come from you, many of you, the loyal subscribers. I don't always engage because I have to stay sane, but there's a lot of Pascal always performs against weaker competition narratives out there. And
listen, I need I'm sorry for interrupting. I just need to say this. The way that fans, I was going to say this fan base, but that sounded a little direct, more direct than I wanted to speak.
That would be amazing. That would sound like a heel, like, promo in wrestling. This fan base of ugly, stupid Neanderthals.
That is not my rant. My rant
The way that
the way that fans have spoken about Pascal since Kawhi left and since the bubble season, the bubble postseason most specifically, it's not right. it's just not correct. Not only is it not right, a lot of the things that have been said and a lot of the criticisms that have been tossed toward any player, just that's not how you speak to people or about people. But a lot of the criticisms that are directed specifically at Pascal are just not valid. Like, yeah, sometimes he underperforms or has underperformed in the time since the bubble that we've mentioned, but he's just returning from an injury. He's getting his conditioning back. He's had some flashes where he's looked really good and somewhere he's looked really slow, especially defensively. But yeah, like I'm not comparing him to Andrea Bargnani, but I am going to say that when Bargnani was here, whenever the Raptors would lose a game, it would be Bargnani's fault, even if it actually wasn't, you know? I'm sure you can.
Yes.
You can back me up here in terms of fans, what fans would say. And I feel like in a way, Pascal has become the player that people will look toward and blame if there's a loss. Just like you said, he was leading scorer in Golden State. Wasn't a great game by anybody, and they lost, but the loss wasn't his fault. And we need to figure out a way to get people past this part of where as soon as something is wrong, it's Pascal's fault, because that's just not valid. It's not correct, so we need to stop that. That's my take.
To whatever, and first of all, 32 points against Sacramento, 10 of 12 shooting, perfect.
After getting stitches his... Did you notice that they were playing Bleeding Love?
Not only did I notice it, Holly... It was mentioned in my notes. The game ops in Sacramento, that might be my favorite, like, game ops crew I've seen. They,
really?
Yeah, they were incredible. They showed the actual referees after a bad call. and like, they just, like, totally gave in to the fan angst. And they did something else that was, they played, the Kinks during a review. Video review, they played Tired of Waiting for You.
That's great.
Which, anyway, just great stuff. And I love the Kinks. Like, they're my favorite British invasion band. So maybe that just had me
this
all
This was
in.
Made for Eric Corrine. That's really interesting. I didn't know that. I did tweet about it, and a bunch of fans from Sacramento did tell me that they've been doing that for years.
It's legitimately funny. Yeah.
It is. I was like, this can't be a coincidence. And
yeah, as long as, like, the guy's not, like, passed out on the ground, like, that's a good bit. It's a good bit. 32 points. Missed two field goals.
10 of 12 from the floor.
Missed one free throw. Was very good in extinguishing. And just, like, he had the whole bag on display. He was, you know, doing the clockwise turnaround over both Harrison Barnes and Rashawn Holmes. He was getting to the rim. He dropped, I think, all three of his attempts from three fell. Mm-hmm. He was great. And it's important to be reminded of that, because when we have a conversation about Pascal Siakam and on his place on this team, we should be able to consider both the good and the bad, not just the bad. And I do think there's a legitimate conversation to be had about how he fit in as a second scoring option or a third scoring option versus how he is as a first option. Like, he was this paragon of efficiency that year he broke out. And he was, you know, true shooting percentage up in the 60s. And since he's become a first option, as you would expect, and as all but the true, true superstars do, he has gone into the low 50s. And by the way, OG Anunoby, who everybody loves, and I think has a very bright future in this league, is basically doing the same thing this year. His true shooting percentage is not very good. And these are It was his third season that was abnormal. It was the next few seasons. And I think in the bubble, you can say he played poorly. I think that's fair. I think last year, he played mostly fine and couldn't hit a three-pointer to save his life. And this year, I think there have been as many positive signs as negative signs. I think the defense is very valid. And if you want to get caught up in the contract, I think 29 out of 30 teams in the Raptors position reward that guy following a championship with the exact same contract they gave him. The 30th team is the Phoenix Suns, who did not give that contract to DeAndre Ayton.
Wow. Did you have that planned?
I've been thinking about it for the last 10 minutes since we started this conversation.
Since I started my rant, that's why you weren't backing me up on my...
I just wanted to let you go. I just wanted to feed the fire.
No, but that's the one thing I don't like about us being the public fans, whatever, knowing contracts, is that there becomes a weight attached to it that isn't always, it's just not fair. It doesn't hold because, like you said, 29 out of 30 teams aside from the Suns, that was very good. I wasn't expecting that. They have these contracts to give and they're going to give them to players. And there are only, you know, five or six players in the league that actually perform to a degree where no one is ever going to question or bring up the contract, you know, like,
yeah. But maybe every team should be imitating the Suns. They're the best team in the league.
All right. Actually, you know, what's crazy is that no one has been talking about this. I follow the NBA pretty closely. I watch games every night and it occurred to me like earlier this week that they had won. I think it was 11.
I think they're at 12 now.
I think they're at 13.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Maybe that's not right. But yeah, I was stunned. I was like, why is this not a story? Why are we talking about LeBron not playing at the Garden? Oh, look at that segue. That was on our notes. How was that?
Very good.
Yeah.
I will suggest that the actual reason for that is because the Suns made the final last year and nothing really changed about them. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, good team is still good. And there's all this, and I'm not backing it up, I'm not supporting it, but like because of the injuries last year, there are questions about how much of that was quote unquote deserved and earned, and how much of it was a product of injury based circumstances. And so there's a lot of let's see it in the playoffs, kind of like there was with the Bucks last year, and frankly, kind of like there will be with the Bucks this year. Yeah. And you get a championship, you can't take it away. But I think the common narrative, you know, if they lose to the Nets or lose to the Heat, it'll be like, oh, they won the only year that no other team could stay healthy. That's all besides point. Phoenix is good. And I think Golden State has swallowed up most of the awesome team discourse. One, because Steph Curry is just a bigger star than anybody on Phoenix. And two, because it's new. It's new compared to the last two seasons, at least. And it's like, everybody loves talking about Steph, and they play a very different, very attractive way. And everybody's kind of been like, most people pull for Steph. He's like a baby face. And I mean that both in the way he looks, but also like, his persona. And none of this is a criticism, but there's more to say about them and the possible addition.
I think there's more of a history there where you're looking at a team that has won and you want, people are curious to see, are they going to get back? Clay's return is somewhere
closer. Although Steve Kerr did deny the reports of contact being okay.
The report came out and then he refuted it. But yeah, I think there definitely is more of a storyline there just because people want to see if they're going to make it back. But yeah, I was surprised about the Suns. Good for the Suns. Did you see the Milwaukee Bucks Orlando Magic score on Monday night?
I saw a screen grab of where it was in the third quarter. I don't know where it finished.
Yeah, it finished a bit closer, but at halftime, I think it was like 74-42 or something. Like it was just one of those crazy.
So the Bucks aren't going to finish 10th in the East, is what you're indicating?
Yeah, probably.
The Bucks and the Hawks are going to be good, and that was distorting the East standings for a while. It won't for long.
I may have been wrong about the Raptors finishing 5th. We will see.
Before we get into more Raptors, do you want to talk about LeBron and Beef Stew? It seems like you do.
That is an insane name. I did not know that was a thing, and then I had to read it a couple times, and then I realized, Stew.
Yeah. It's the second. It's the second best nickname in the league behind Off Night. Is the best nickname.
What's Off Night?
That's Davion Mitchell's name. Nickname.
Oh right. Okay. Have you seen Cole Anthony's walk-off interview? Sorry, I know we're skipping, but now that you said a random thing, I wanted to see
him. Like the one from a few weeks ago?
The one from like every night. He does this like every game.
Okay, I've only seen one, yeah.
I think we've talked about this. Maybe we did, I'm sorry. Yeah. They're just my favorite thing in the NBA this year.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you, if you watched pro wrestling, it would explain everything about all of this. LeBron and Beef Stew, thoughts? Yeah.
I bet that Adam Silver really did not
didn't want to suspend LeBron.
Didn't feel good seeing the Lakers schedule and seeing MSG on the docket. Personally, I think that LeBron probably should have been suspended more than the game.
That was a dirty play.
It was, and it was shocking because I don't think we see that from LeBron very often or really at all. Probably just frustration, but the replay, the overhead shot of the free throw line was so bad. And I absolutely understand why
Isaiah Stewart.
Why Stewart freaked out.
Now, you can't do that. You've got to, because he had multiple opportunities to be talked down by teammates and coaches, the very patient Dwayne Casey.
Seriously, shout out to Dwayne Casey, who after the game was like, I just like, you know, he didn't want him to do something that like would define his career, you know?
Yeah. In that home court, if not that same, not that there was ever a risk of that happening again. Of course, by that, I'm referring to the malice.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it was dirty play. And
really mad.
It's a dirty play. And if you're a really competitive guy, it's going to set you off. In other news,
what did you think about the punishments?
Not surprised about what happened. I think you had to suspend both of them.
You think one game was enough for the elbow? I guess it is.
I mean, is there a huge history of suspending guys more than that for like
a non-punch?
Think how many times that Serge Ibaka tried to punch people and was suspended for one game than them.
That's fair. It just looked so bad. And I think that's part of it too, is that like, depending on the angle you get, it can really like, it can affect how you view something, you know? And that replay just looked really, really bad.
Yeah. Well, what do you think Rich Paul was thinking when that happened?
Yeah. Who can you explain? Okay. I have to tell you, I've had more than one person message me after your tweet yesterday in which you said,
I didn't know that Adele and Rich Paul were dating.
And they said, does Eric only see his own tweets? Like a variation of like, does he only see his own tweets? Does he look at a list where there's no one else like tweeting about? How did you not know this?
Why are so many people tweeting to you about me?
They weren't tweeting me. They messaged me. Okay. It was people that mutually know us.
Well, they could just ask. They could just ask me.
I will protect their honor.
Yeah, that's their identity. They could just ask me. I'm pretty approachable most of the time.
But I think it was just like a surprise because we were talking about Adele, which is how it came up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it was like independently of that.
I mean, I can't tell you how it happened. I obviously don't only see my own tweets. Was I like glued to Twitter during the playoffs when she was obviously courtside a few times? No.
And she was courtside at a Lakers game recently.
Yeah. I don't know what to tell
lots
people.
Lots of photos.
Yeah.
And her album release. Like
I don't care.
Tons of discourse about it. A lot of memes. Our friend Becca, the wife of our friend James.
Yeah.
Who said, you know, the thing about this album is imagining that it's about Rich Paul, which...
It sounds like none of it is. Yeah, it's about her divorce, about her kid, and about some, like, bad ex in between the divorce and Rich Paul.
It's not, although it would be pretty... it would be very NBA to have, like, you know, one of the biggest stars in the world have an album dedicated to LeBron's manager. That would be extremely NBA, but it isn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
really
I can't explain it. It's not an effort. Like, I'm not trying. I don't typically read gossip news or like celebrity gossip, but I would expected this. I would have expected this to enter my world somehow. And by sheer force of luck and obliviousness and whatever, I avoided it, and now all I can think of is that Adele is giving Ben Simmons negotiation tactics.
Oh my goodness! I think we've talked about Ben Simmons in every.
You know, it's fascinating. The Raptors, they play in Memphis on Wednesday. They play in Indiana on Friday, and then they come home, I believe, for the start of a 7-game homestand. I think. Which makes sense because they will have played 6 on the road to play Boston on Sunday. Your favorite team, Holly.
Yeah. Again. How is it Boston again?
Well, at least it's not in Boston. Those games are done for the year unless there will be a playoff meeting, which I'm sure you would take well. imagine like a play-in game in Boston.
No.
The Boston loses the 7-8 game. The Raptors win the 9-10 game, and then you have the 8-9 winner goes home in TD Garden, the Toronto Dominion Garden, to play the Celtics. That'd be
absolutely not. Watch, if this happens, I'm going to be furious.
I'm willing it into existence just for content. What you looking for this week, Holly? Other than full health, which would be nice.
Yeah, I'm looking for Utah. I think that's what I said last week, but I really want to see him return. And I'm curious to see, like, when he does return, if he'll, like, how long it'll take him to, you know, get his conditioning back, but then also, like, you know, just get some time with this team and the style they're playing and new teammates and all of that kind of stuff. I just want to see a 48-minute effort that's the same, you know?
Yeah.
Again, with the team, I don't think it's that it's not, I don't think it's a lack of effort, but the way the games have been going, where there's just these stretches where they look really good, or at least, you know, pretty good, and then it just kind of collapses on itself, especially defensively, that I would like to see a little more consistency throughout.
I do wonder if, like, and the Detroit game, which they lost, is sort of a counter argument to this, but like when they play good 3-point shooting teams, are they just going to look awful because they can't get out to shooters quick enough? And Nick
maybe
Nurse
that'll get better. Like,
yeah, and Nick Nurse has repeatedly said he expects it to get better. He's seen examples where it's better. I think we have anecdotally too, but like that's my worry, my big worry right now, and that's because they're 21st defensively, and this team gets killed on occasion by 3-point shots, and it doesn't seem like they're lucky 3-point shots. Like, you look at the Golden State game, and that's an extreme example, but Wiggins and Poole, and especially Porter, were taking wide open shots. And
the Portland game was annoying because it was like they weren't hitting those shots, and then the second the fourth quarter started, it was just a flurry.
Yeah, and so I think that is baked into this defense, is the idea that there will be those moments where they give those shots up, but it just can't be And so if you have top five, top seven, 3-point shooting teams, and you're giving those shots up, even to a smaller extent, it would seem to me that the math stops working very quickly. And the math that I wrote about this against Utah, the math that they're trying to create with turnovers, with offensive rebounds, like against Utah, they had more than 14 shots, or they had 14 more field goal attempts than the Jazz. But if you lose the 3-point battle by 9 3-pointers, that's 27 points. You're giving up that completely, right? Like it doesn't matter if you had 14 more field goal attempts because you're down 27 points.
You can't match.
And that's not what's happening on it. That's not what is happening on a nightly basis. But if they're susceptible to this, and that's proven consistently to be true, especially once they go healthy, it's going to be a problem.
There's a reason why the 3-point shot is so crucial in today's NBA. And not to circle all the way around and put a bow on this, if you will. But again, it makes me think of Nick telling Scotty he needs to take more threes. Because being a threat from three is a really important part of being a star player.
Yep, as Nick Nurse said, what are we waiting for? Let's do it. Let's launch those threes. Let's get that Pascal Siakam 1-for-27 stretch out of the way so he can start shooting 35%.
Yeah, they've been there. They went through that, and that was awesome. wasn't awesome. It was awesome to look at it
in hindsight. The payoff. Yes.
Yeah.
When you can look back on the journey from the top of the mountain, it's pretty cool. Right now,
I did not expect to bring up Andrea Bargnani in this week's episode. Thoughts?
I didn't expect you to either. Maybe we can make it a running segment.
You know what I mean, though, right? Like, just.
Well, he became a lightning rod. Yeah.
That's the term I was thinking of. Yeah, in my head, I was thinking of that's the term.
And now he was a lightning rod for a reason, and a player who had done a lot less for a team that had done a lot less. And anyway, we've talked about it. We've talked about how money comes into play. We've talked about how the notion of paying a player like a certain player, even when there's an artificial maximum cap placed on how much you can pay a player. Rest assured, if the Raptors did not sign Pascal Siakam to that salary, even if he had the exact same year that he had that ended in the bubble, some team would have offered him a max contract.
Many teams, yeah.
So it's fine. That doesn't mean we can't analyze his game. That doesn't mean we can't criticize his game on occasion. But I think we have to take a holistic view of things. And when say he's a max player, acknowledge that that doesn't mean he has to be a top five or top 10 player. We don't have to compare him to those guys. We do have to compare him to the percentage of the offense and defense he's being expected to carry, and go from there as he gets into better and better shape and better conditioning and just better form, we hope.
More consistently. I like how you're able to be calm and well-reasoned when you say this, and meanwhile I just, like, my emotions come out and I just get mad. So you probably should have led this conversation.
Yeah, it'll be okay. I like a good rant every so often. Yeah, we need that. Nobody wants to hear Shades of Grey. I don't think that does well on audio format. We all just want hot takes. That's why my old podcast was called what it was called. Our old podcast. This is not that podcast. This is Jurassic Pod, once again, $1 a month.
You're crumbling over the pressure of promoting something. It's $1 a month. It's a freaking steal. Think of all the readers that are all the writers that you can read, all of the teams that you're going to get to follow, the features. It's the features that's my favorite part.
Yeah.
It's a deal.
You can find out how. As speaking of my old podcast, as Blake put it this morning, only $1 per month to find out how a guy with a very easily pronounceable last name pronounces his last name. It's a steal! Holly, we'll do this again next week. Thanks so much for joining me. Thanks, y'all. See ya!